When you are driven, focused, and have a relentless pursuit mentality, you make things happen. Shantae Page is that person. She has created her own path in the music and TV film industry as a top producer, working with people and TV shows that you will recognize and be familiar with. She is gifted and has a passion to help and add value to others through coaching as a John Maxwell certified speaker and trainer. She is doing it all. Join me as I talk with Shantae Page in this episode of Why Not You.
We are live and in effect.
Right.
Not live, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
What's going on, everybody? What's going on? This is another episode of Why Not You, and this is your host, D. Wells. I am joined today by Shantae Page.
What's up, D. Wells?
How you doing, girl?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, just a little bit about Shantae. This girl is, she's done some amazing work just in television industry. And she's pivoted from, you know, career where she's in a limelight. I don't know if I want to say limelight, but she's making things happen like on the production side of things. And, you know, now she's all in the transformational and spiritual coaching, changing lives. She's doing it. She's, you know, she's actually helping people become the best version of them. And that's what I love. What's going on? Let's get it.
I'm good. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast.
No problem.
You're doing things yourself.
Thank you.
Yes.
So how's it going out there on the East Coast in the ATL?
It's going good. It's going really good. I'm actually going to speak at the Black Women in Film conference tomorrow in Atlanta.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Get down.
Yeah. So we're doing a whole, I'm a part of a group of powerful women of color called Real Divas.
Uh-huh.
And three of us are speaking at this conference. And we did it before and we shut the room down. Like it was jam packed. And right. Basically people want to know how to place their content, how to get their content greenlit. So we're doing it again. They asked us to come back.
Now, how long have you been part of that association?
When somebody asks you to come back, that's how you know you did a good job.
Oh, that's right. I know, right?
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just about to ask. How long have you been doing that? Or part of that organization?
We started it in 2019.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there's so many women of color, powerful women of color in the entertainment business. Uh-huh. And the city of Atlanta or in Georgia proper. So
are most of the women part of the organization are all in entertainment?
Yes.
Do they have their, okay.
Everybody's in entertainment. They could be a producer, a writer, in front of the camera. Some are actresses like Jasmine Guy is in it.
Okay.
So it's all women in the entertainment industry. I want to say it's about 12 of us, maybe 15 of us, some directors, like if they're powerful women.
Wow. Now, are you guys actively recruiting or you got to go through the process like a sorority, huh?
Yeah,
you got to weed them out. You got to weed them out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of, I think we're closed for now.
Yeah.
Started in 2019, but I'm sure at some point they'll open it back up.
Right.
Shout out to Ty Johnson. She was the one who, and Cass Siggers, they basically started this whole thing and got all of these wonderful women together.
That's good. That's good.
All women of color.
Wow. Uplifting the community.
Uplifting the community.
That's it. So through that, I guess just being part of this organization, I know you guys work with a lot of other people and you just constantly evolving yourself. Like, how did you know that was like your passion to be involved in something like that as far as like just kind of coaching and sharing?
Ooh, that's kind of a loaded question because I didn't realize that was my passion until about 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I've been producing since since 1998.
Okay.
In some capacity. And that it was in music then, and then transitioned to TV. And now it's still TV, but it's purposeful content.
Got
so
it.
Yeah, that's why I say it's a loaded question.
So what did you get your degree in from Howard?
Business management.
Okay.
A minor in pre-law. And it had nothing to do with what I went into business for. When I was at Howard University, HU, the number one Black university in the country.
There she go.
There I go. You know, Hampton and Howard have this rivalry. We can't help it. And I love my Hampton sisters, but, you know, we are the number one HU. So when I was at Howard, I was at Howard with Puffy.
Okay.
Love, I don't know what he's called these days, but he's Puff to me.
Yeah.
He was a year ahead of me, I want to say, a year ahead of me. And he left school, went, dived deep into the music industry, started working with Andre Harrell at Uptown Records. And I was like, that's it. That's what I want to do. So I called my mom. I was like, listen, I'm leaving. I'm leaving Howard. I'm going to New York. I'm going to be in the music business. I'm following Puff. She was like, no, you're not.
I'm following.
You're not following Puff. I don't know who the hell Puff is, but that's not what you're doing. Like, you're finishing Howard. Like, what are you doing?
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, I really want to be in the music business. I'm already managing groups. And I was. I had a guy group, and Michael Ealy was in the group, the girl group. And Egypt Sherrod, who has a show in his third season on HGTV right now, was in the girl group. And I got the guy group signed to Gene Griffin, who had Guy, Basic Black, all of the Guy was popping. So I thought, I made it.
Right.
And I was like, I'm going to be in the music business. And my mom was like, slow down. That's not what you're doing. You're going to finish. And so, I loved law. My minor was law, and I was in the what they call the stay in school program.
Uh-huh.
So I got credits to work at a law firm right after school. So 3 days a week, I wasn't the person that would be on campus and chilling and hanging out. I had to leave and go to work.
Wow.
And I had to fit it in, and I had to get a certain amount of hours in for it to be considered a minor. And I love law, but I was like, when I graduated, I said, I'm 4 more years of school. That's going to take me out of the game.
Yeah.
To get right to the music industry and moved to New York the very next day after graduation.
Wow. You made it happen. Now who put that, like, I mean, cause you did business management and then a minor in pre-law. Was that something that you wanted to do at that time? Or was it something that somebody was like, you know what, you'd be good at this. Why don't you just go down that road?
I asked the administration building, what is the major that can get me out fast? Like, I'm not going to, you know, have to, and I can still be in a stay in school program, but what can I take? Because I'm very clear I want to be in music. And they were like, we have these, they would do these business, because I was in the school of B. They would do these business fairs and have all these Fortune 500 companies come. And they were like, are you serious? You want to be in the music business? Like, no one then was in the music business.
Yeah.
And we were like, why would you want to do that? Why don't you care about what you're majoring in? And I said, because I just need to get this degree. And then I'm out. I'm in the music business. That's it for me. I was very clear.
Right.
Very clear. So I ended up taking business management because everybody was like in the administration building.
Right.
People talking to me was like, well, you could use management skills if you're going to be in the music business. So you should do this.
Wow.
I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Like, I was very clear. It's like, okay, what do I need to take so I can get the degree?
Uh-huh.
I can please my mom. And I'm so happy that I have the degree now.
Right.
I'm so happy that she didn't let me follow my impulsive nature. And I still ended up being in the music business. So, it all worked out.
That is crazy. Yeah. That you were so clear and you knew what you wanted to do. Because when I went to school, the only reason I was going is just to play sports, or because my mom or my parents wanted me to go, right? They said, like, you need to go to college. I had no idea what I wanted to major in, what I wanted to do at the time. And so it was just a lot of time and money wasted.
Oh, no, I was so clear.
I heard that.
Clear. And I was working on records. I was working in the studio with Chucky Thompson, may he rest in peace, with my groups, paying him $80 a track. And I brought in Terry Ross, and he's from the West Coast.
Uh-huh.
He was footing the bill. So I had it all planned out because I'm a college student. I'm struggling. So I found somebody who, had extra money. We're not going to talk about. And I was like, you'd like to invest in this.
Right.
I need studio time. I need to pay for the producer, X, Y, and Z. Like, I was making it happen. I really was.
I
admire my younger self.
Now, do you think you still have that same kind of ambition now or what?
I do. Yeah. I do. But it's different.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're green. So you haven't been burnt yet. You don't know what that feels like. You don't know what the sting feels like. So it's very different going in green and being a newbie versus going in green and have been stung.
Yeah, that's right. That experience too.
That experience, yeah.
And now you operating in your gift and coaching and healing folks.
Yeah, yeah.
So, goodness gracious. So before we even go into that part, I got to kick it off with the quote, because we didn't even do the quote.
Oh, yeah, you're supposed to kick it off with the quote.
We got to do the quote. So this is a Maya
Angelou
quote.
Let's rewind. Let's remix.
Rewind.
Put the record scratch.
That's right. The things you are passionate about are not random. They are your calling. Maya Angelou.
Yes.
So there we have it. We got the quote in, y'all. So you said that you discovered your gift probably like two or three years ago?
I want to say I discovered my gift at the age of 13.
Okay. Wow.
And it was my gift of producing.
Uh-huh.
I think my gift has evolved as I've evolved.
Got it.
But at the age of 13, I was putting together plays, like physical plays, and giving lines to my sisters, my two younger sisters, Amber and Bianca.
Uh-huh.
And we were performing these plays for family and friends. And then I said, okay, let's take this thing on the road. And we would go to elderly homes or assisted living places and perform these plays. And I spearheaded that whole thing at 13 years old.
Goodness gracious.
When I look back on that, I'm like, I really started producing at the age of 13.
Wow. Plays for the elderly. That's off the hook.
And we made their day. Like, this was like entertainment for them.
Right.
They sit around and play bingo, and they sit outside. This was entertainment for them, and we were young kids, so they got the biggest kick out of it.
Yeah.
So it was a win-win situation. Now, what gave me the idea that we should go, like, that was a built-in audience, and we should go to the assisted living or the elderly homes? I have no idea, but something said to me, there's a built-in audience there, go for it. So that's what we did.
Wow. So what were these plays about?
I don't remember. I just know we did. And I was serious about it.
Uh-huh.
And now my sisters rehearsed after school. And I'm sure they were like, we didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
But I was bossy and I was like, this is what we're doing. And I'm the oldest. So,
right.
Yeah.
And so did you continue that through high school?
high school, I was into being a socialite.
Okay. Yeah.
My best friend and I, Ayanna Brown, we were the it girls.
Yeah.
And I have to say we did because we started a fraternity slash sorority in high school with Marcus Johnson. He's a, I always get this word mixed up, pianist.
Okay.
And he's a very accomplished one. And we said, we're going to come up with this fraternity slash sorority and everybody has to, you know, we have to accept you to be in it. And everybody was lining up to be in this fraternity slash sorority that we put together. So I was more into that, being the it girl and the limelight and all of that in high school than actually producing.
Wow. And then look at you today. TV and film.
Yeah.
So have you ever connected with Tyler Perry?
I worked for Tyler for 2.5 years, 222 episodes.
Wow. Have
him on it. Yep.
That's off the hook.
Yep. And 222 is my number. So go figure.
And yeah. I'm sure you learned a lot just working with that. Working with him and his organization.
It was incredible. It was boot camp. A lot of people, it's intense.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of people are like, it's a lot, but he's so driven and he gets it and he pushed me. And the Aru brothers pushed me because they work directly with him and they're his right and left. And at the time it was Roger Bob, who is my guy too. And they all pushed me. I achieved things that I never thought I could achieve.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful for that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I absolutely worked for Tyler Perry.
So do you think just working with them and since they were so driven, they actually had a vision that they actually knew what their vision was. And so now that you're part of that vision, they end up pushing you and believing in you so much that you probably exceeded your own expectations, right? So it's like, now that you're in coaching, how do you actually apply those same principles to the people that you actually coach now?
I think you have to make people aware. Uh-huh. I think you have to raise their conscious level and let them know that this is something that's possible.
Right.
People don't. It's like if you're in sports and your coach doesn't tell you that you can do it. Like you can practice all day and come right back and practice the next day and go hard just like you did the day before and believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think the mind conditions you to think you can't do it. What working with Tyler and that whole experience, he was like, you can do it. You can do anything. I mean, he showed us you can do anything. Right. He would continually, he would test himself.
Uh-huh.
All the time. He would demand more of himself all of the time. He didn't get comfortable with being comfortable all the time. So he already had, I was working with him when he got the first 100 episode order of House of Pain and Meet the Browns. They had just finished the 10 episodes. He sold it to Turner.
Uh-huh.
I came in when we were starting on the first 100 order, of both those series. But he didn't get comfortable there. He was still doing movies. He was still doing plays. And then he was like, oh, I want to do a talk show.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like he just, and I was like, okay, he never stops. So if a man who has the wealth that he has never stops, how can I stop?
Right.
What do I look like stopping? You know, right. So he gave me motivation.
Uh-huh. Wow.
I want to be that. Also, it's like no matter how far I get, I want to keep striving to get out of my comfort zone.
Right. Never find a com- not never finding contentment whatsoever.
No,
or complacency. Yeah.
Nothing grows out of comfort.
That's right.
Yeah. Nothing. Nothing grows there.
Nothing. That's off the hook. I mean, just keep on striving and just continuously growing. I mean, there's so many successful people who actually achieved a high level of success who are still pushing. I mean, outside of Tyler Perry, I mean, you're just thinking like some of the entertainers, like whether it's 50 Cent or, you know, some of these other tycoons like Warren Buffett or even John Maxwell, what we saw, right?
Not to say that. Even John Maxwell, look at him. Like, he didn't have to be at that conference.
He didn't.
And we saw him how many times? Like almost every day.
Every day.
Every day. He made his presence known. He didn't have to do that.
Nope.
And he sat there. He was sitting in the front row, just like us. Yeah. You know, gaining knowledge from the speakers.
Uh-huh.
There's something to be said about that. You know, and there's something to be said about somebody that leads that way. Right. I've always been a person that if my team is on set, I'm on set.
Right.
If we're in the field, I'm in the field. And people are so surprised that I was a showrunner and executive producer and I'm in the field with them. And they're like, okay, like you've been here like 12 hours. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, we're here.
Right.
So I'm like, that's how I believe in leading. I'm not above you. I'm going to get my feet, you know, dirty too.
Right.
My feet dirty, my hands dirty. I'm all in. So, and I think people appreciate that because you appreciate them and you're not just coming in barking orders and you haven't been there all day.
Right.
When everybody's like, oh yeah, she just showed up and now she's barking orders. And then she goes back home and does whatever. It's like, she says something. She's been here all day.
Yeah.
No. Like we can't say anything to her because she's been here. Now, that's not always possible. If I have three shows going at once, it's impossible to be there all the time. But I always want to have compassion for the people that work for me and for what they do and not be the person that just comes in barking orders and expecting things to happen especially if you haven't been there and been a part of the process in that. So, yeah.
And I think one of the and I think one of the major things is just the fact that they actually see you there and putting in work.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, like you're not barking orders, but there's something to be said when they actually see the head person, right? You know, grinding with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a huge impact. And it makes me think about some of the supervisors that I've had. Who are in these high positions and they're actually, you know, right there alongside of us, you know, grinding and working. But at the same time, they're communicating with us, getting to know us. And so that makes a huge difference rather than, you know, having somebody in that dictator role, just barking orders, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it goes a long way.
It does.
And then he or she, man, they adding straight value to us. We can't let this person down. We're not definitely not going to let them outwork us.
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, I think you just have to have compassion for people.
Yeah.
And I have to say the leadership program that you and I were both just certified in is only going to help me to be a better leader in production, to be a better speaker, to be a better coach, and to elevate me, period, in life.
Right. I believe that also.
Yeah.
And because we just surrounded ourselves with a bunch of straight up winners, you know what I'm saying? And they're all intentional with helping other people and elevating other people to go out and share those gifts with the world. And Mm-hmm. Get them to that same level.
Yeah.
Yep. Just to grow internally.
Absolutely. And I have to say to you, I wasn't always, I wasn't always in this space. Like right. I was in a, I got to get this done. I got to get, you know, this record done or this show done or, but I wasn't always in the space of, but at the same time, I have to help other people evolve.
Right.
It took me a minute to get there. Yeah.
Well, I think that's just growth, right? Because I mean, when you think about it, I know I wasn't raised to, hey, you know, you just need to think about this other person, be concerned about this other person. It was like, you know, you just hustle and grinding for yourself just to acquire things. And that was my vision of success at one point, just to see what I can accumulate. And all right, I got this car, I got these clothes or whatever, but that ain't nothing but status. There's that transformation process that we actually go through as, I mean, I think once you hit like a certain milestone in your life or, you know, age, you'd be like, okay, you start reflecting. Hey, life's not about that. It's really about serving and helping other people.
Well, the music business, at least what I was in the music business for, an A&R, which is artist and repertoire, which is a person who picks the songs, the album, who finds the songwriter if it's not the artist, finds the producer if it's not the artist, and puts everything together and shares that intimate relationship with the artist. But it's brutal.
It is.
And it teaches you to be brutal. It teaches you, at least when I was in it, I want to put that disclaimer because I don't know what they're doing now. Any means necessary. Like, I got to have this hit and I got to have it like now.
Yeah.
And you use tactics like, you know, if the person's in your office, it's like, okay, well, we're going to get this contract done. Get your attorney on the phone and we're going to order some food and we're going to get you what you want. But yeah, we're going to get this contract done today.
Just like that. Wow.
I mean, and that was rewarded. That was rewarded. And that's the culture of the music business. So it makes you very aggressive.
Yeah.
And not so much if you were in publicity promotions, I'm sure. You're aggressive in promotions. Publicity is not as bad. But in A&R, it's very much a masculine business. It's a male dominated business. So when you're a female, you've got to get that vibrato and tough skin.
Yeah.
Like, how to get it.
Wow. So with everything that you learned and now, you know, you just operating in your gifts, what kind of opportunity has that allowed you to pursue, like in your, that aligns with your purpose?
Well, I would say the opportunity that it allowed me to pursue is, and I don't want to sound like this is a big old John Maxwell infomercial, but it was the leadership program. Because I would have never done that had I not had a spiritual awakening and come to the realization that I needed to change some leadership skills, and I needed to, and ultimately I found my purpose. Honestly, when I had the spiritual awakening. So yeah, I wouldn't have never joined the leadership program had I not.
Right. And that's awesome that you say that, because just going there, it actually brought clarity to me also. Just the fact that I thought I wanted to go one direction, and just kind of knowing with my calling and my purpose and things that I like to do is just kind of helping people get out of that stuck situation and transition to something better, which is probably one of the reasons why I started the podcast, is that everything kind of shifted to coaching. And so that's what I really want to just kind of like focus on. Because I just think there's so many people out there who just have these ideas and things that they want to do, but they're just stuck. And so this is one avenue that I'm using or platform that I'm using that kind of actually helped just by like even sharing your story, right? It's going to inspire somebody. Yeah, that leadership conference is off the hook.
And for me, it's like I pivoted many times in my life. I went from music to producing music to at the top of my game, switch to TV, had to start all over in TV. And then I still wasn't fulfilled. It's like the journey is more rewarding than actually landing in the destination. So I was like, okay, what's next? You know, I need more. And I'm not getting at the top of my game in TV. I mean, the hardest thing to do is to get your own show greenlit and actually show run your own show. And I did that and I still wasn't fulfilled. So, you know, is it them or is it me? It's me.
Right. It's you. Like,
what more do I need? And that was digging deeper in my spirituality, which led me to leadership and coaching.
Wow. So what do you think actually clicked in your mind to actually make you transition and just feel like, okay, this is what I need to do?
Well, I know what happened. I know beyond the shadow of a doubt, I went digging deeper in my spirituality. I started doing plant medicine. Mm-hmm. And it led me to a spiritual retreat in Tulum that Shannon Amos led, the daughter of John Amos, who, like me, was a producer, an executive producer, went on her own spiritual journey, got the vision that she was going to be a facilitator in plant medicine. And she was like, yeah, right. When it calls you, you don't have a choice. So I was in Tulum and I participated in something called ayahuasca. And 2 days later, I participated in something called Bufo, where you smoke the toad's venom. And the toads were not harmed. That was a big thing for me. And I got the clear, distinct vision that I was supposed to speak in front of people.
Wow.
That I was supposed to be a leader, that I was supposed to speak, that I was supposed to coach. It was crystal clear. And I returned on a Friday. And I joined John Maxwell on a Monday.
Ooh-wee.
I'm on a mission. Like when you find your purpose, you can't play with it.
That's right.
You know, like it was a distinct calling. And I was like, oh, wow. Like it was something I've never experienced before, because the reason why I left music at the top of my career is because I got to the top and I wasn't fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I started achieving real success in the TV business. I can't say I got to the top, because scripted TV, I was in non-scripted, scripted TV. If I would have been a showrunner in scripted TV and got an Oscar or something like that, that would have been at the top of my game. So I can't say I was at the top of my game, but I was achieving a level of success that the average person will never achieve. And I still wasn't fulfilled. So to go all the way to Tulum, Mexico, and have this spiritual retreat and have it revealed to me that this is my purpose, I couldn't ignore it.
Right.
Hey, thank you for joining me in this conversation with Shante. Hey, it's only going to get better in part two. So y'all have a blessed week and stay true to yourself and your vision for life, and become the best version of yourself.